Blog Talk Radio.
Mama told me, yeah, right, hey, mama told me, yeah, yeah, come on. My mama told me, one day I'ma grow up big and I'ma be a king. And my papa told me, it's okay to deal with shit, don't forget your dreams, cause they'll get you through it. So called life, they call living, but I call it strange, and I better do it. Cause I'm on my way, it's strong enough that I can shake the pain. Hey, Mr. Sunshine, Mr. Rainstorm, meet me in the conference room, we need to brainstorm. Meet the middle ground, need an even keel, but you a war, pick a guy, give me fever chills. Think I'm broke, like my flu shot broke. I need to give him things to keep me out of that moat. My head above water, thoughts of those lost this week, all the tragedy, stay on repeat, like we can't shake shit. I can't speak on it, reach to the sky, but I can't beat on it. Drinking my cup, so I'm gonna sip on them. Cam Newton's probably pissed, you can't sip on them. All these levels of these relative problems, the benevolence is elegant for those who can solve them. I'm feeling pretty low.
This is the Forbidden Fruit Radio Show podcast. And the call-in number for the show is 347-202-0492. And please call in with your comments, questions. Today's topic is going to be about religion, of course. You know, you heard the saying that 50 is the new 40 and orange is the new black. Is religion the new crazy? Is it crazy? It's either the new crazy or is it the old crazy that just won't die? There's so much out there. And I know we wanted to do the show earlier when all the church members were in church. So, but we did. We had to postpone it to this evening, so that's what we're doing. So, but this is going to be a fun show. If you're really adamant about church and you believe in heaven and hell, this might not be the show for you. You might want to turn the channel now. We're going to really have fun with religion today. And the web address for you to listen and to listen to archives is www.blogtalkradio.com/theforbiddenfruit. Okay, oh, and also on Facebook, please like us on Facebook. That's www.facebook.com/theforbiddenfruitradioshow. And please email us at applebrain@live.com. Okay? And that's applebrain@live.com. And also, please follow us on Twitter. That's TFF Radio Show. And, also subscribe to us on iTunes. Yeah, this is going to be a great show. Let me do this. I'm going to play a church skit by Gary Owens. It is hilarious, and we're going to come back and talk about how this is so crazy in church. Okay, here we go.
My kids got baptized at a black church. Wasn't prepared for that. I mean, I prefer white church myself. Black church just takes too long for me. You got to have your day free. You can't make no plans going to a black church. You plan on going to a football game, you ain't going to make it. Hey, you might not make Monday Night Football while you're bullshitting. Black church is ridiculous, man. Remember the first time I went to a black church, I didn't know it was going to take that long. You know? Like, I didn't eat breakfast that morning. I thought I was going to eat in about an hour. You know? Oh my God, I almost died of malnutrition that day. Waiting for Sally Struthers to pop up, you know? I was sitting there in the church, man. I was like, why is this taking so long? You know, I was sitting there. I figured out having the service why it's taking so long because, you know, when you go to church with white people, man, we don't say nothing, you know. We shut up and we listen, you know. If somebody tries to talk while our preacher's talking, we tell them, shh, zip it, focus, okay? One more song, we're gone. I remember the first time I went to a black church, I didn't know that when black people agree what the service is about, they don't wait. They yell out right there that they agree. I know it's okay to yell out. I'm sitting there. I'm the only white guy in the whole church. I'm getting upset with all the black people in the pews around me, you know. I thought they were being disrespectful to the preacher. I know it's okay to yell out. I'm just sitting there. language on it. Are you serious? It's going to talk while he's talking? Yeah, that's really disrespectful. Once you zip it and focus, it's 1:30. I'm ready to go home. Talk about it. Are you with him? What? You're allowed to talk? Are you serious? I'm going to say something. Okay, watch. I'm going to say something. Hoodie-hoo! I heard him. Come on, it's 4:30! Another song! Why is he singing Rihanna? That has nothing to do with church! It's 6 o'clock! You guys have a step team? Are you serious? The First Baptist Steppers, it's 8:30! A freaking poet, it's the talent show! That's the fourth time she caught the Holy Ghost, she's lying! You can't catch the Holy Ghost four times in one day at 10:30! Stop passing this plate around! I don't have any more money! It's midnight! It's Monday! I'm late for work! It's forever, man.
I love that skit.
there's a grain of truth in some of that, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a lot of grain of truth in that. I don't know if you've ever been to a black church. It can take 3, 4, 5 hours for the service. And that is just too long to be in that building.
Yeah, I've never been to a complete, you know, a regular church service. But when I was a kid, we used to get together for Singspirations. And that was a whole different experience. You know, you got the First Baptist and the Black Baptist, which was called the Second Baptist Church. It was on the other side of town, and this was back when we were just starting to segregate schools back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a shocker for me as, you know, a little white kid, because I went to that real strict, you know, starched, you sit there, you be quiet, you shut up, you listen politely, and you leave after 30 minutes, 45
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I've been to
these
churches.
People were having over at the Black Baptist Church. They were having a blast.
Yeah, yeah. They get in there, don't want to come out, and then you know a lot of people do want to come out. I know I want to come out at least a third of the way through. I'm like, golly, how much more? When are we gonna get to the sermon? You know, we 2 hours. He hasn't even had started the sermon yet. But let me tell my audience who I have here. You just came on. I did introduce you. This is Auntie Atheist, and she is on to help me out with today's show. Thank you for coming on. She's going to be a guest host for today. Guest host. I really appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you having me. I'm really glad you called. I enjoy your show. I try to be a regular listener. I don't catch all of them, but I enjoy the speakers and the guests that you have on there.
Thank you, because we had you called in for the first time on our last episode. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
We finally, because I know I would see you in the chat room, and we finally got to coax you in to coming in and actually putting your voice to the name.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, this is so great.
Sitting in on these podcasts, I just started a few months ago, and it's been really interesting. I sat in on a pastor's podcast.
Okay.
And I've got my username that is active in the forum, in the chat forum, Auntie Atheist. And people start hitting me up on the side. What's wrong? Are you angry with God?
I know.
Okay. Are you talking to me? Yeah. No, because I don't believe in God, so there's nobody to be angry with.
There's no one to be angry at.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. And they kind of go away. But
yeah.
Yeah, now, sometimes they figure that you've got an anger issue, but that's
an anger
that's
issue.
Not,
yeah, why are you so angry and why are you putting all this hate? I got that on my page on Facebook. You know, why are you putting all this hate out? It's like, it's not hate. I just asked a question. I mean, the question I asked was, slavery is proof that God does not exist. And they just got all bent out of shape with that. I'm like, it's a question. I mean, think about it. I'm trying to get you guys to think. That's what my show is about. And you're aunt.
Well,
you say auntie atheist. So do you have a niece or a nephew that you kind of help along with atheism or what?
No, it was just when I had nieces and, well, I still do, I guess, nieces and nephews when they were little, I was Auntie Penny. And when I was looking for a moniker, actually I had just tuned into a blog talk podcast or whatever it was, and I was signing on to Blog Talk Radio, and they said, you have to come up with an identity of some kind if you want to chat. And so I thought, okay, I had to come up with something really fast because I wanted to be in the chat room.
Right.
And I thought, okay, I'm not Auntie Penny, I'm Auntie Atheist. And it just kind of fits, you know.
It does.
Older gal, I'm sitting here crocheting in front of my computer. I'm not exactly the most technically savvy person in the world, but that's why I was late.
Hey, you got on. You got on with Skype at that. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, not some of the young people can't navigate Skype.
That makes me feel good.
I know. But the first time you get on, even though you have Skype, sometimes Blog Talk wants you to put in your ID number. And sometimes you haven't used it enough where you even remember it on the spot. And you're going through trying to remember your ID, your ID name, and try to remember your password. It's just a whole lot going on in that few little seconds where you're trying to get you to log in. I'm like,
well.
So,
what were you doing, Penny, that you were late? Oh, something godless.
something godless, yeah.
Everything I do is godless.
That's the best way to do it. I mean, because to me, that's why I put the topic, is religious the new crazy. And I thought about, you know, it's been crazy quite a bit, so maybe it's the old crazy that just won't die. But all this stuff you hear in the news about stuff happening and people just doing crazy things, sometimes in the name of God. And some of the stuff that we do on a regular basis that we don't think about. Like I said on the show before, that there's a saying, an African saying, that a camel cannot see its own hump. And that means that your craziness, you don't see it. You're quick to see somebody else's craziness, but you don't see your own. You'll sit there and you'll say that, okay, when 9/11 hit and all the hijackers were promised like 100 virgins, and you thought, oh, that's just so silly and crazy. What are they talking about? And you believe that you're going to go to heaven and you're going to have like 1,000 mansions on the hill and streets paved with gold, and that makes sense.
Yeah, I know. Who's the comedian? Where is he from? I think Ireland or someplace. I can't think of his name.
Jim Jeffries?
I don't know. He says,
he's from Australia.
I don't want 72 virgins. Give me 2 flaming whores. He says, the heck with that.
72 virgins. I mean, that's a lot of teaching going on. He's got this book that this goes here, this goes here, and this is, you put this here.
And they'd be fighting. No, he doesn't want any part of that.
No.
So, some strange stories. You know, when you say, is it just an old crazy, something that I often think of is that these religions that we have around nowadays, some of the traditional religions are really attempts, failed attempts at science.
Yeah.
And, trying to explain how the universe works.
Right. They didn't know how the sun worked. They didn't know how the stars worked. And it's still lingering on today because they have astrology, and actually Christianity, a lot of stuff came from astrology. And ever since I've heard about astrology, it doesn't make any sense to me. They have these pictures, these people in the sky, and they're supposed to connect the dots in the stars, and they have a whole guy on a horse, and it's got four dots. How's that become a man?
That's kind of like biblical interpretations nowadays. You really have to warp your mind to come up with that. How in the heck did you get a horse out of those little, you know, few stars up there?
Exactly, exactly.
Pretty wild.
Let me say hello to a caller real quick. Okay. Hi, this is Jonna. Hello, caller.
Hey, how are you?
How are you doing? Welcome to the Fertility Radio Show.
Oh, man. It's good to be here.
Great. We were talking about religion, and is religion the new crazy? And I have my co-host on, Auntie Atheist. Say hello to Auntie Atheist. Jonna.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Is this Rachel?
No, Jonna.
No. Oh, Jonna.
No, yeah. She's one of my long-time friends and long-time listeners to the show.
Nice to meet you, Jonna.
Nice to meet you as well. So you had made a comment earlier about people do things in the name of God.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I hopped on and did a little bit of research.
Yeah.
And it's not God that they're proclaiming. It's either Jesus or Buddha or like the Son, not the actual creator.
Yep.
Which is interesting. Because for me, you know, I don't know that I would say that I'm atheist. I believe in a supreme being or innate intelligence or universal intelligence or source. But they don't claim Jesus, or they don't claim, you know, like the Father, so to speak. It's always someone underneath God. And I just a side note.
They're not thinking high enough. They're not going up high up in the department, just stopping at Jesus and not going to God. But you're right. It's so much that they can claim. They can claim, I guess, whoever, and they do claim Jesus, do claim God sometimes. But you listen to religion, and I get confused even myself. I mean, aren't they the same some kind of way, God and Jesus?
No.
I mean,
the Bible makes a very clear distinction. We're all made in God's image, but not. I'm fine.
Auntie, you guys gonna say something?
I think. Well, these different books will all have some sort of claim that they make, and for me, it seems pretty obvious that all of these religions were created in man's image.
Exactly.
And that's why they're so personalized, and that's why people argue over them so much, is because they really seem to be projections of the own person's
themselves, yeah.
Yeah, their identity.
Men, exactly. I mean, man.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these religions don't really think too well of the woman. And yet women are the number one goer to church. Especially like in, you know, Catholic or Christianity or Baptist, stuff like that. That's who's in the church are the women.
There were probably some driving factors in that. I don't know. It was a way that back in the 1800s especially, women could excel. They could apply their skills and their talents. And it was a legitimate outlet for them. And also, the church is a good way to keep people in line. And when you have men that are wayward, you know, out philandering or drinking or doing whatever, that church community is a pretty powerful community weapon to police their male population. So I don't know. I think there are numbers.
a lot of men in church are still doing their philandering. You don't hear that word too much nowadays. But they're still doing their philandering, especially even the pastor is doing some philandering.
Right.
You know, the deacons, you know, and the priests, they're doing some philandering.
But that's not in all churches.
No, no, it's not all churches, but there's enough for me to say it. There's a lot of churches out there. There's a lot of people doing it.
In everything, not just churches, but look at our government or any
organized.
Exactly,
exactly. That's my point. That's my point.
So, yeah.
It's a representation of America. Church is supposed to, I guess, that's not supposed to happen in church. You're supposed to think about, I'm in church, I'm doing the Lord's work, whatever. So I'm not about that. So the percentage doesn't go down in church, I don't think. I think it's the same percentage whether you look in church or you look outside the church.
Right.
So why have the church?
I think that something that, you know, churches often, the religious communities have moral claims that they make.
Mm-hmm.
That just don't hold water. There's no evidence of a real superior morality.
And you know what their comeback to that is? That, well, yeah, we do all the same stuff, but as long as you ask for forgiveness, it's okay.
Right.
That's got to be like the most too good to be true religion. That you can still operate like you're outside the church. But the difference with us is that you mouth your words and say, please forgive me, I have sinned. Okay, boom.
Right.
Hey, you walk away. Go do some more sinning. But just make sure you come back here and ask for forgiveness. You know, don't do something bad and then die.
I haven't heard a pastor one time that preached a sermon on that there's no difference between the body of Christ and the secular community. The only difference is that Christians are saved. We're all sinners, but Christians are saved.
What kind of crap is that? I mean, we got bound by this sin that supposedly happened in the Garden of Eden. And that's like how we got the name of our show, The Forbidden Fruit, which is about knowledge, and they were forbid to partake in the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now, my thing is a good lawyer could have got them off because how can you be held responsible for something, for a sin, if you don't have the knowledge of good and evil before you do it? But then after the fact, after you eat the apple or whatever fruit it was, now you've got the knowledge. So it's
right.
Like, how can you be held responsible for it if you didn't know any better?
Well, and supposedly this God who was omniscient, who had perfect knowledge, who knew everything, and knew in advance that they were going to do this, put it there anyway. And right there in plain reach in the garden, in the mythology, yeah, and then told them not to touch it because the day that they did, they would surely die. And, well, you know what? I would not leave a knife laying out with my infant or toddler crawling around.
No.
Knowing that they could get hurt.
Right.
So what kind of parenting is that? You know, it's
What kind of parenting is that? It's bad parenting, you know. You know, they need to call what's it called? DFACS? Need to call them, Department of Family Children's Services, back then on him. His two children, he leaves this tree just hanging out in the open that they're not supposed to take part in. And
right.
He wrote the script from beginning to the end. So he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
So why can't – and I had a conversation with one of my other co-hosts and asked her the question about – I fast-forwarded to the Jesus days. And I said if God – the plan was for Jesus to die. That was the plan. If he didn't die, no sacrifice, the plan was not a success. So in order for his plan to be a success, someone had to kill Jesus. Someone had to commit a sin. So How does that work? God commissioned a sin? He just condemned the whole race because someone ate an apple. And he sits there and puts a hit out on his own son.
Yeah. And let's not forget about talking snake.
Talking snakes, yeah.
Right.
How crazy is that?
That's enough to give a little kid nightmares, you know?
Yeah. You already don't know any better, and you sit them next to a tree, and a snake hollers at you. Hey, bro. Like,
little girl.
I say, did you say something, Adam? No, I thought it was you. It was a snake. Dad, are you still there?
I am. You know, it's interesting. You know, in my line of work, I do not talk about religion. And to listen, I see both sides of the coin. You know,
yeah.
I grew up Baptist, Church of Christ, and Catholic.
Wow.
It's a heck of a combination.
It is.
And I see both sides, you know, and I think my perspective is I respect all religions because it's serving a purpose. Everyone's lives, no matter what it is, if it's giving them something hope to believe in or to self-work or self-improvement, it's absolutely serving a purpose. Whether I agree with it or not, it doesn't really matter. And I think if a few more people had that standpoint, it would be a lot easier, you know, because it seems like people push their beliefs and their thoughts on other people so strongly, and it's almost like they're trying to convince themselves of it versus truly believing it.
Yeah, sometimes I think so. That, I mean, it has some good points in religion. I mean, everything does. If you take everything and break it down, everything has something good in it. But
there's so many truths in the Bible. You know, again,
the truth
I'm not religious. I'm spiritual.
I mean, the truths that are in the Bible are true because some stuff is true. I mean, just the laws of nature. But the stories, I mean, the places that they happen, they were probably actual names. But as far as stuff happening in the Bible, it's just crazy to think that someone would believe this stuff, like Exodus. I was talking to someone on Facebook about Exodus, and they were basically saying that when I made the comment about slavery being proof there's no God, and he brought up about the Israelites and the 430 years of slavery and 40 years of like walking in the desert or whatever. And I'm thinking, how come there is no other documentation that talks about and, you know, says that even happened? 430 years or 400 years of slavery. You think someone would have wrote that down? It would have made a headline somewhere other than the Bible. And then in the desert for 40 years, how do you get two to six million people walking through the desert for 40 years and not leave any evidence? No bones, you know, nothing. I mean, you know, 40 years, someone died in that 40 years. You know, that's like two generations of people. And they want you to believe this stuff.
And it took them 40 years to travel, what, a few miles?
Yeah. I mean, were they crawling? I mean, were they walking by the circles? You know, at some point, someone had to say, Moses, are we there yet? Moses, are we there yet? Are we there yet, Moses?
Yeah.
Are we there yet?
They needed GPS. They just went around in circles for years.
It's like, hey, that bush looks familiar.
Yeah, like, you'd think somebody would have noticed.
You know, it's like that cartoon on the Fred Flintstones when they run it and keep running. You see the same stuff over and over and over again. This is so ridiculous. So ridiculous. But
they are. And you know what I think is really disturbing though is when I think most modern Christians, well, maybe I shouldn't say that, but I would like to think that most modern Christians or non-fundamentalists would take this book as primarily literature. The Old Testament especially, and allegory and metaphor and whatever. But there are enough people that take all of this literally.
That's the problem.
And they try to relive the culture that existed 3,000 years ago. And enact laws and force their beliefs on others by, you know, if they can't get people to believe it through witnessing to them, then they'll force it on them through the legal system, or they'll try to.
Right. If it was just a book in the fiction section and just a really, really great novel for just reading, as opposed to introducing it as the blueprint for living, you know, once you do that, it gives it, like, you know, this weight that it can't really live up to. And you look at some of the stories, you know, as a fiction book, they're great stories. You know, Jonah in the well, Noah and his homemade boat that he got all the animals. And if you don't think about the logic of it, it's a fun read, but if your mind starts wondering and thinking about, okay, well, how did he get all the animals? How did he get the animals from Africa and Australia? How did he get to keep animals from eating the others? How did he have refrigeration on the boat to keep all the food fresh? You know, you start thinking.
Shoveled all the crap out of there.
And if people was left behind, like, you know, what about the vegetation? What about all the flowers and the trees? They couldn't stay underwater for 40 days and 40 nights. They were dead when they got back. Let's say a separate boat he pulled behind that had all the vegetation in the boat, you know.
Right.
It's just logically, it makes no sense. It's crazy.
Well, a few thousand years ago, you know, people knew so little about the world and about how things worked and about biology and this and that. That story, you could make stories like that fly. You could make people believe them.
Yeah, 3,000 years ago, you had no internet. You had no connection to libraries and schools and thinking. It was an easy sell back then.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it's being sold now. Why are people buying this? I don't understand it. It's crazy. It's the new crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's a powerful tool, too. Governments often will, you know, they love religion because the religious base is easy to manipulate, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Right.
Anyone, I think we talked about this the other night on the show, you know, when Hitler realized the power of religion and the fanaticism that often accompanied it. And that's why when, you know, when Russia, which was mandated an atheist country, and Stalin was just as bad, you know, with those atheist edicts. But who was the great liberator to come in 1941 and restore the people's rights to go to church? It was Nazis. People flocked to, you know, they welcomed the Nazis coming in because, oh, we get to go to church again. The Nazis realize the power of that.
And I'm not knocking everything in church because, I mean, churches do wonderful things. I mean, they feed people, they feed homeless, they feed a lot of people in their communities and across the world. They educate people. But my thing is, I mean, this could be done, you know, in a secular manner and not be frowned upon. Because, I mean, I remember my church and going to church and walking from parking my car to going to church. And the route to get there, I would run across maybe two or three people begging and going in and coming out. And I take my money and give it to church. You know, I come out, I tell people, look, I put it in church, I don't have anything left. And then after a while, I thought about that. I'm like, you know, that's who really needs the money. But by the time you put it in church, that dollar, by the time it filters to the street, it may be a nickel. You know,
yeah.
Because it's got to pay for the pastor's salary, got to pay for the church mortgage, it's got to pay for the organ, it's got to pay for all the other administrative duties around the church, taxes, it got to pay, not taxes, church is tax-free, but it's got to pay
yeah.
for all that stuff. So by the time it gets to the street, it may be a nickel.
Right.
I'm like, you know, what am I thinking? Is this wrong? And for me to tell the people in the street that I don't have any money because I put it in church?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a – I sat in on a podcast about a month ago. I don't know the gentleman's name, but he has one on Blog Talk Radio. It's called Church Folk Revolution.
Church
have you ever
now?
Heard of that? Church,
what's it called?
Church Folk Revolution.
No, I have not heard of that.
Well, he has – preached a couple of great sermons, and he has quite a little following. And it's, you know, get out of the churches. You know, quit giving your money to these guys.
Right.
You know, this is not what this is all about. And, of course, he goes after the big-time evangelists that are driving the limos and flying the private airplanes and whatever. But people are, I think, just getting – they're kind of seeing through a lot of the stuff that goes on. And they realize, Well, how much charity work are we really doing compared to the amount of money we take?
Right, because can it be done more efficiently is my question.
Right.
You know, you got an $8 billion church and a mortgage on that. And it's basically a beautiful cathedral, edifice that's there that looks pretty on the outside, looks pretty on the outside. And I'm thinking that you could actually do much better by just, you know, having a less expensive building and doing the work as opposed to looking like you're doing the work. And I did some research. And I found out that there are about 450,000 churches in the U.S.
Wow.
And you would think with that many churches, we would have less problems in the world, in the U.S. And just to make a comparison, there are 146,000 convenience stores in America, 160,000 fast food restaurants. Also, hotels and motels, 46,000 hotel motels. That number still falls short if you add them all together of the 450,000 churches in the U.S.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
there's
pretty.
A church almost in every corner. If you go to the black area, it seems like there's a church almost in every corner.
Yeah.
But the black population is suffering the most.
Yeah.
sorry, I'm going to interject for 2 seconds, and then I'll
go ahead, Jonna. Go ahead, Jonna.
You know, I learned a long time ago, the quickest way to suppress a society or suppress an individual is fear.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
The quickest way to suppress our society. That's why there, in my opinion, there's so many churches, so many, you know, organizations under a religion or religious aspect. It's to
fear is the fear is their gasoline. Fear is the wheels, greases the wheels of the church. Yeah, without fear, you have nothing.
And nowadays, there are people that are more free thinkers, so to speak. I would consider myself a free thinker outside of the box.
Yeah.
Which is unnerving, you know. Look at what was it when one of the hurricanes hit. It was a really big one in Louisiana.
Katrina?
You know, yes, thank you. And everybody's like, oh, my gosh, it's revelations. It's the end of the world. It's, you know, going back to religion to, like, get a grip on society. It's like, you know, we're going to instill fear. We're going to do this again, you know, because we have to be in control versus it being a non-ego-driven position.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the only way, I mean, our government can control us.
Yeah.
And that's if you choose, you know, for me. And not trying to be a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but that is the quickest way. I remember sitting in church going, oh, my God, if I lie, I'm going to hell. I'm going to burn in hell.
I'm
five and going, oh, my God, they're talking about murder, you know.
Yep.
Just dying on the cross. And, yeah. You know, when I had kids, my oldest, my twins, I couldn't imagine having them sit in church and hear about a man hanging on a cross and dying and being beaten. But yet they
yeah.
wanted to show the movie, I don't even remember what it's called. It was really big about Jesus' death.
You're talking about Mel Gibson?
Yes.
Okay,
you know,
yeah.
They wanted to show it, you know, like five times a day at church, and I'm like, that's really disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I couldn't watch 10 minutes of it because the energy was so crazy.
It was like
yeah.
a grindhouse movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was just, oh, yeah, it just made me sick. But, you know, it is, it's truly the way to suppress the society. And now that people are, go ahead.
Something that always disturbed me, especially in retrospect, is the fact that these little kids, I know I sure did, you go home after the church service and they're thinking about what they've heard, and they're being told that Jesus died because of them. It's their fault. They're sinners. They're bad. They're born evil. And he had to go through this to save them, and that they deserved that punishment, but he did it in their place. And
so,
I think,
sorry, can I comment really quickly?
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So even as little kids, we are stealing that we are not good enough, that we are not worthy. And then that starts and perpetuates cycles to keep people in the same level of consciousness.
Right.
Because if you're not good enough, then why will I even try? If I'm not good enough, and it's that level of consciousness of saying, well, if I'm not good enough. And then it starts to self-chatter. And then you really want to get into it, then look at the, you know, the drugs that people have to take because of I'm not good enough.
Right.
And when you leave it to your core, I mean, chemical imbalances get thrown off. I mean, supplication. There's so much that goes on with our body because we believe that we're
got
not
to believe.
Good enough.
Believe.
Yeah.
The basis of religion is belief. And it breaks you down, and they use fear, and they use promise of all this stuff that you're going to get after you're dead. You know, what about now? And that's what they told the slaves. You know, don't worry about because you're a slave now. You go ahead and work hard, but after you die, you got some good stuff coming to you. You know, you've been living like this.
I think that's a great way to perpetuate a slave mentality. Is that yes, we're suffering now, but we just have to keep enduring it until we die.
Right, because
yeah.
we're not good enough.
Greatest,
we're not good enough to
greatest,
be happy.
That's the greatest con. That's the greatest con of all time.
Yeah.
To someone to believe that, and we're not good enough, and someone else is going to die for your sin, a sin that happened way before you was born, before even Jesus was born. The sin of Adam and Eve when they were tricked into eating this fruit, that didn't have the sense enough to know they were doing wrong. That's why I said they had a good lawyer. They could have got out of that. Because a good lawyer could argue that point and got them off.
That brings to mind an Al Pacino film, I think, that Devil's Advocate or something like that.
Okay.
Wasn't that Al Pacino?
I think so. Because I was thinking of the other one where he said, hoo-wah. I was thinking of that one.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
that was,
oh, gosh, it's been forever
That was the sin of a woman in that.
Oh, yeah.
He was in the courtroom. Hoo-ah!
Yeah. He played a good bad guy.
Yeah. Well, that movie wasn't a bad guy, but he was funny in that movie. Yeah, he was in a court scene on that one. But I'm not sure if I can't remember Devil's Advocate. I need to check that out.
Tom Cruise was in it.
Okay. Yeah.
And
who else?
Anyway, it was about this law firm.
Okay.
And the devil was a real high powered lawyer.
Oh.
And kind of a trippy movie.
We always thought about putting God on trial on the show. And, for all of the atrocities and all the murders that took place, especially in the Old Testament, because he was a mass murderer. And I brought it up on, whenever you bring this stuff up on your Facebook page, you have, Christians, religious people looking at it, and you ask the questions. They never answer the question. They always jump around the question, you know. I'm like, just answer the question. I mean, it's a legitimate question. It makes sense. Why? One time I asked, I said, look, is it arrogant? Do you think you're arrogant if you claim favor, if you claim you get favor from God over anybody else in the world? It's arrogance. If you think, hey, God has time to spend with me to make sure I have a great parking space. Wow. On the other side of the world, little babies are starving, much less have a parking space or a car to put in that parking space. They don't have food to put in their stomach. So God's taking time out for me to make sure that my favorite football team wins, to make sure that I get a promotion, to make sure that I have $200 tennis shoes. So if that's in your mind, that's nothing but arrogance.
Well, I don't know if it is arrogant or that credit's not given to the right person. You know, we've talked a lot about the power of thought.
It's the same. That's a logical choice that it should be. Credit is not given to the same thing, but in their mind, they're thanking God for stuff that they've done on their own or able to get on their own or just by circumstance or coincidence.
It's pretty narcissistic. Mm-hmm. You know, the world, the universe revolves around them. And God is their puppet. He's at their beck and call. I had an interesting experience a few years ago when I went to work for a company where this one of the executives there had let me know that they only hire believers. And they had to give God credit everything that they do. And I was questioning this, like, well, what do you mean by giving credit to God? And she says, I'll tell you what it means. It means that when a friend of ours got cancer, we all gathered around in the conference room and we held hands and we prayed and it worked. And I thought, okay, well, don't you give credit to maybe the doctors or the treatment or modern medicine? What about all the people that it doesn't work for? And what are you doing? You just think that you've come up with a more refined method of manipulating God and getting him to do what you want him to do. You've got the technique down just right, and if everybody gets the right technique, they'll be able to get their God puppet to do what they want to do.
So God has everything already mapped out. He has everything already out, because if you pray for something don't come true, then they say, okay, well, it wasn't God's plan. So his plan is already there. So you're telling me you're going to pray to God, and he's going to have to scratch out his plan. I'm not sure what he has written in stone or ink or whatever. He's going to have to scratch that out and say, darn, I can't do that because these people got together and they petitioned me and asked me to do this. So I got to change it because that's what I said in my Bible. So, and but you know what Albert Einstein says about that?
What?
He says coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You wonder if he really believed that or if that was kind of tongue in cheek.
I don't know. I don't know. He probably, he was an atheist, or he was a non-believer.
Yeah.
And just like Jonna was talking about earlier, how you're giving credit to the wrong thing. And by terms, that's considered an egregore. An egregore is something that your mind, your thought process, that you attach your thoughts to, of what you credit something to. Like, like the people who are praying for the person that got cured by cancer. They prayed for it, and it became true. So they gave credit to that thought process, not what really happened. So anytime something happens in accordance to what they're asking for, like you rub your lucky rabbit's foot and your team wins, that's your egregore. You're giving credit to the rabbit's foot, not the fact that the team put together an effort and practiced hard,
right,
and won the game. No, it all boils down to that rabbit's foot that you beat, that you're rubbing. And
yeah.
So religion, to me, right now, is just a superstition. It's a...
Right.
You know, it's like let's do it, you know. And then they forget about all the, out of 100 times you pray, and maybe 5 times or 10 times it comes true. You forget about the other 90 times that it was unanswered.
Yeah. Or what about, mm-hmm. I saw an interesting comment on Facebook one day about, thanking God for saving your family when 2,000 other families died in that tsunami is like sending a thank you note to a serial killer. Dear Mr. Serial Killer, I love you so much. Thank you so much for not killing me, for killing my neighbor.
Yeah, that included me. That number, that gruesome number, thank you for not choosing me as one of your victims. But people don't think of that. They don't think about stuff like that. It's such like a tunnel vision, and you see what you want to see, and you forget all the destruction around you. Yeah, you got a great parking space. Yeah, you got a promotion. But somebody on the other side of the world can't even get anything to eat, and they're dying today. That's what's on their agenda today, is death, you know. And you're thanking God, and you can't beat this into someone with a religious mind. No matter how plainly you make it look, how black and white you make it look, they can't get it. You know, and I was like that. I guess you have to come to it naturally. You have to kind of like arrive at that conclusion on your own some kind of way. And that's what this show is about. It's about planting seeds. And if you plant enough seeds, maybe somewhere down the road it will grow. And people will understand, hey, this stuff is crazy. You know, why am I on my knees praying to someone I can't even see, who I can't even hear, who doesn't speak back, who doesn't respond to what I'm saying, and I'm paying money to this building, putting money into this church, and nothing happens.
Yeah.
Year after year after year after year. And if something does happen to happen just out of coincidence, you give credit to the church or to God.
Right.
You know, it's crazy. And I look online, I saw a church is a great business to get into, you know, from the financial side of just doing a church. I mean, starting a church, you know, might be the best business to start in America. So it doesn't take much capital, it's tax-free, and your product is zero-cost widget that your clients can't figure out if it exists or not until they die. So they ain't asking for no refund. You know, it's like, that's your product. That's your product is eternal life and maybe an occasional blessing that just happens to coincide with something that's going to happen anyway.
You know, when
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jonna.
Okay, so you know I'm going to have to chime in on this one, right, Kenny? Because you can't see my work. And though I do not say in the name of Jesus or in the name of Buddha or whatever religion sits, but I know that it works.
But you have a better track record than God.
That's a bold statement. No, you know, and I understand. But, you know, for people use it as hope. You know,
hope is good.
That's the
hope
only
good.
Hope that they have because of that cycle. And
so is it
maybe
good to
it's
tell
the
someone a lie?
Level of,
Is it good to tell someone a lie just so they have hope?
I'm not saying that, but if that's their truth, how can you convince me if I say my countertop is white and that's my truth and you look at it and you say, no, it's brown, that's your truth?
Not necessarily. I mean, that's a factual statement. Either it's white or brown.
Not necessarily. It's perception. Everything is perception.
Well, no, that's visual
because
perception.
Because factual would be that somebody said, yes, this is what color it is. That's factual.
Well, you could actually, you know, use a light meter. And, you know, that there are instruments to determine.
Right, but a human being had to say, this is the name of this color, and their perception, and then proved that it was that color. So they said everything up around it. And I'm using this as an example, and I know it's a little out there. But what I'm saying is that it's perception. If someone believes it to be true, then by all
that
means.
But that isn't
make
really
it
truth.
But it's their truth. It might not be your truth, but it's their truth.
Well, their truth could
be
wrong.
You remember the gentleman that we had on the phone when we were having the discussion? He was like, it doesn't work. It doesn't work, what I do. But my truth is that what I do does work.
Because there's a business between you and him. I mean, if he was there in your city and could see you at work, that's one thing. Now, if you were in two different places, you're looking at a color, and neither of you guys are in the same place, I might have to take your word for the color. But if you're sitting there looking at it, just like Auntie Acey said, I mean, colors have different away patterns as far as, you know, the spectrum of light that bounces off of that.
Right,
and
but,
that's not,
okay,
that's not
so take somebody like me that sees an energy and sees different vibrations. So I can see in different ones. That might be, my truth might be that I'm seeing at a higher vibration versus where you're seeing at, or I'm looking at energetically versus physically.
But
what I'm saying is that it's perception.
Not everything is perception. I mean, there's some things that you can't perceive. Two people will perceive them differently as far as perception. I mean, like color, for instance. So like, okay, it's 100 degrees, or is it freezing? For us the number, for us the thermostat numbers. There's certain things that are facts that you, there is no, okay, this is my fact. No. Usually facts are universal. If they can be measured or quantified or somehow, stuff that's left up to argument may be something like, okay, a novel. Is a novel good or bad? That's perception. Perception is like in the Olympics when people dive in the pool. People have different numbers. That's what they perceive. Okay, he should get 8, he should get 9. It's not an exact science. But certain things are exact sciences. You know, 2 + 2 = 4. Now, your perception of 2 + 2 might equal 9. So 9 is your fact. But
well, okay, so let's talk about the unknown. So unknown, God, or whatever the case may be, it's still about perception. If they believe it to be true, then it's their truth.
That's correct.
Because you can't prove that they're wrong, and you can't prove that they're right.
No, I can't prove that they're wrong, and they can't prove they're right. I don't need to prove they're right. They need to prove they're right.
I think, Jonna, I think your statement was kind of general, because our truth is kind of being used as a blanket term here. There are some things that someone might say is the truth. But yes, we could prove one way or the other, you know, whatever it was, we could test it. But there are other things.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's still a lot of things that we have to learn about the brain and the body and, you know, how information comes in and gets processed. And I think over time we're going to learn more and more about that. So I cannot completely trash somebody's personal subjective experience of the world. But there are some claims that are made that can be tested.
I agree.
Yeah.
No, I absolutely agree. Maybe I should have reworded my statement and not been multitasking, so I apologize. You know, if we could prove that God exists or, you know, we have all some age or whatever the case may be, we would have already done it. But the truth is that we can't prove it, but we can't prove it, but we cannot, can't.
You can prove the unlikeliness of it. You can prove the unlikeliness of it, that of the things that are claims that are made by religion, when you look at the numbers.
Exists, but we can't even,
well,
we can't disprove that it exists either, if
my
that makes
thing
sense.
My thing is, in my personal sense, I can prove it doesn't exist in the manner that it's being claimed to exist. As far as prayers, as far as the way things work, as far as the unevenness of life around the world. In the Bible, God loves everyone equally. If everyone was loved equally, everyone would be living equally. Everyone would have enough food. Everyone would prayers would be answered. But you see that so consistently that it doesn't happen around the world. So how do you explain? So these are questions. I'm not trying to say, okay, well, God doesn't really exist without beyond a shadow of a doubt. But it looks like he doesn't, or at least he's not on the job. Because
no, and I get it. But what if, you know, what if, like, let's go into science. You know, matter's made up of mass. Mass is made up of energy. And we're made up of energy, right? And in science,
okay,
it says you cannot create or destroy energy. So what if we have a being, universal intelligence, source energy, soul, whatever you want to call it? What if we have experiences? And what if this is just a blemish in time? And how vanilla would it be if we had the same experience?
The same experience from what?
As everybody else.
I mean, what particular experience are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Or just, you know, in general? I mean, what are you saying?
Just in general. I mean, you have starving kids.
Okay.
Sort of on a soul level, they knew that they were going to come in and that was going to be their life, and then they were going to bounce and do something else.
And I've had a thought in my mind about reincarnation, which that explains that more so than religion, because if you do die and come in as a kid, you die, you know, as a baby because you starve, you come back, boom, you reset. Now you got another chance somewhere else in the world. So it's just a quicker point to get to your next life as opposed to spending maybe 80 years of this life and then going to another life. I mean, that makes more sense.
Absolutely.
Than the other
story.
And was it
just learning lessons along the way? And I'm not trying to say any which way. I'm just having a discussion.
Yeah. Right, right. I'm just saying
and
that.
I think oftentimes.
Go ahead, Auntie.
Well, and sometimes that idea of reincarnation has been taken advantage of to keep people in their place. Well, this is your destiny. This is your life. Yeah, it'll be better for you next time. Or you can hope that it'll be better next time.
Yeah.
So it keeps people complacent and not complaining so much and essentially resigned to
mm-hmm.
their lot in life.
That's another way. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what Christianity, that's what religion does in itself. It says, okay, like, you're going to have a better life in heaven. They paint this big, beautiful picture of this place that you're going to. I mean, it's so nice up there. And every time you look at the pictures, you got these big pearly gates and they want a fluffy cloud. And, you know, people are just so happy. And me, I'm thinking, okay, what's with the gate? Why is it a gated community? What's going on up there?
As
what
above,
kind of
it was segregated.
What type of neighborhood is heaven in?
It's segregated. It's prejudice. No, I'm joking. I'm so joking.
Are they trying to keep people
seen,
in or out?
Hey, have you guys seen Betty Bowers, America's Best Christian?
No, uh-uh.
She's on the internet, and she has this really, it's this cute site. It's all tongue-in-cheek, but she lives in a gated community, and she has some of her Christian friends who are on the website, and they have various business services that they offer. One of them is a real estate agent, and the real estate agent specializes in gated communities for the Christian community so that they keep the wrong people out. But it's pretty cute. She has a lot of tongue-in-cheek kind of cynical observations about Christians today.
I'm looking at the chat
room. Some of the evangelicals.
I'm looking at the chat room, and somebody named Roll Tide says, "You heathens." It's called Edomites. She said, "I don't have any more names to call y'all."
Oh.
You know, so I'm going to give the sorry, I got to give the disclosure. You know, I respect all religions. And again, it's their truth. That's just a side note because of what I do. And not because of what I do, but that's truly my belief. Is if it's serving a purpose in everybody's life. And not one person is in the right to judge. But it's ironic that she would say, "I won't call you a name." Or feel like she has to degrade, so to speak.
I mean,
she could have been joking.
I don't know what her point, what her position is. She could have been joking. I mean, I have a right to judge it for myself. And
absolutely.
So this
yourself.
Is what I'm doing. I'm judging it for myself, and these are the reasons why I've come to my conclusion. And it helps to speak out verbally because people who may be kind of like teeter-tottering on their own and not know if there's someone else out there that's feeling the same way, it helps. Because when you come out as an atheist or a non-believer, you're pretty much ostracized by the people in your immediate area. And so you don't know if you have anybody with you or not. So it kind of gives people the start, hey, I've had those questions too, you know. We got a call. I'm not sure if this is Roll Tide or not, but let's see who this is. Hello, welcome to the Forbidden Fruit Radio Show. Who we have on the phone?
How dare you assume Roll Tide was a female?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Thank you for your apology, sir.
I was just
trolling you guys, man, just dropping little words in.
I've heard
religious people call people, but no, I'm not a religious person myself. But I've taken a different route, though. I didn't go the route of telling my family or friends and people like that and having those arguments with them. It seems easier to just go along to get along and, you know, let them believe in whatever fantasies they want to believe in.
Absolutely. And you know what? And I gotta give mass credit and mass appreciation for people that come out and say, you know, this is not what I believe in, and I'm choosing something different. That is one of the hardest things to do, and I've had to do it in my whole personal life with my work, you know, coming out and saying, no, you know, it doesn't line up with me, but this is what I do, and then everybody say, oh, hell no, that doesn't work, you know.
Well, my thing, though, is I don't know if there's a benefit to actually confronting people and having these conversations with them. And then taking away something that they hold so dearly. You know what I mean? So I don't know if there's any benefit to it. That's why I've taken the position of if they really harass me and really want to know, I'll say something. But besides that, hey, I just let them live with it.
Right. But what if it plants a seed?
This to my attention.
Excuse me?
But I thank the person
the
that brought this to my attention. She was asked about planting a seed, about planting a seed in someone's head, I believe.
Oh, well, I just look at it. I take the position that I learned from the great Dr. John Henry Clark that says all religions are male chauvinist murder cults. And I really don't want to – I don't even want to argue with somebody about it, because then you're presenting it like it's legitimate. You know what I mean? You believe in your man in the sky. You think your man in the sky is greater than other people's man in the sky. Fine, go ahead and sit in the corner and, you know, you can have that. But I'm not going to engage them on it.
Exactly. And I've always said that religion is location, location, location. You know, it depends on where you're born in the world.
Right.
Who's going to be your sky daddy, or if you're going to have one at all. And it's the luck of the draw where you're born. And as far as Christians are concerned, if you're not born in America and you're born in the Middle East, you're not going to heaven, because you just happen to be in the wrong part of the world observing the wrong religion. You chose the wrong horse.
Right.
Put your
you know,
on the
horse. Oh, go ahead.
I think one of the issues that we have today, though, is, and I think it really brought it home to us here in America, was after 9/11. And there are, yes, I think the majority of the people are just living their lives day to day. They go to work. They have their families. They like their traditions. They like their religious communities, that sense of comfort that they get. But there are a lot of them that are dead set and determined to bring on Armageddon.
Well, I would say to that, the people who want to bring on Armageddon don't have any power. So that's just something that they're that insane part of the religious culture. The people in power who do things under the guise of religion really don't believe, and they're just doing that and using it for cover. It's like the missionaries in Africa. I'm sure some of those people actually really believe that they were bringing Jesus, you know, to some of those people, not knowing that they were being used to, you know, cover up, you know, imperialism, I guess you could say. So I'm just disappointed when I talk to people in my family. They go to a black church. There's a white picture of Jesus on the wall. So idea is, even if you're determined to have this religion and it's something you have to hold on to, at least make it your own. If you're going to live in the land of Lake Believe, don't fall
into some. Exactly. My point. I put a just out of joke, and me and a friend was joking, and she was saying, "Thank you, white Jesus." You know, just out of, you know, sarcastic. And so I went on my Facebook page and I created this wristband that said WWJD. What's the extra W stand for? It stands for "What Would White Jesus Do?"
Right. And that makes them very uncomfortable, though, when you bring that up, because, you know, hey, that's all they know. That's all they've seen all their life. So, that you know, it's just a secondary thing. It's not a big deal. But, you know, there's real-world consequences for living like that, to where you've kind of identified who the creator is, and you've created this image of the creator as someone else, and you worship that. I think that kind of makes you a little crazy, but.
Yeah, it does. That's why we said religious is a new crazy. And people live in this craziness every day, and they just don't know how to get out of it. And so I think, like John said, we try to put a seed in someone's head, because I'm glad someone kind of like – it started eating at me a while back, because I'm like naturally inquisitive and I want to know things. And then I think most recently – Dick Gregory gave me, he showed me, turned me on to this documentary called Zygite. And I watched that, and that just opened up some more doors in my mind.
Wait a minute, brother. I did a 3-hour show one night with the great Dick Gregory, man. Did you meet him personally, or was this?
I know him personally. We were coming back from a mutual friend of ours' funeral. And, you know, he pulled out a DVD and a DVD player and just, he got to check this out. So we looked at it, And I'm like, wow, Dick, that's awesome. And so I made some copies of it right there on the bus. And then I found out, like, instead of handing out copies, I could just hand out the URL because it was on the internet. So I just gave that out to people. He posted on my Facebook page. Yeah, Dick, he has a lot of information. In fact,
he is the great ancestor, man. He went off on us that night, too, because we asked a couple questions he didn't like. But, man, I love that guy, man, to the fullest, man.
Oh, yeah, he will tell you what he's thinking. He will give you his opinion and tell you what he's thinking. So, yeah, that's why I got it from Dick. And I watched Zeitgeist, and the first part was about Christianity. And it just broke it down, you know, piece by piece by piece. It's like, God, this makes too much sense. And then just, you know, then you start thinking about your life and how many prayers you put out there. You know, like, even when I was a little kid, I was like, well, I want to be an NBA. I want to be like Dr. Say, I pray for that. You know, that didn't happen. You know, and you pray for other stuff. That didn't happen. And the numbers just keep piling up of stuff that don't happen. You know, and then my mom was sick. And I'm praying for her to be well. You know, and I just pray. I mean, people prayed. People from church prayed. Everybody prayed. Nothing happened. And so you get to think, like, you know, and they give it a little fine print that only things will happen if it's in God's will. I was like, what? What does that mean? Like, me, you know, unless it's already going to happen, I have to know what's going to happen and pray, put my prayers in line with that. What good is that?
Right. What did Carlin say? He prays to Joe Pesci and he gets the same results.
Yeah.
If I could tell a quick story real quick,
sure,
this is like a month ago. I have a younger brother who's going through some issues. So there are times when, you know, we can't find him. But there are a couple of places where we know to look because he's usually there. You know, he gets help there. They usually, you know, it's a sanctuary for him. So anyway, me and, you know, a couple of members of the family were driving around because we were going to look for him. We decided to look for him that day, see if we could find him. So we went by the second place that we usually find him at. And, you know, my mother's overjoyed. She's talking. And, you know, as we're driving back, she starts this conversation. You know, I've been praying about this all week. I just knew something would happen just because, you know, I've been praying about this all week. and just as I said another prayer, we was driving down the street, there he was. You know, just, I mean, I love her to death, but, you know, just complete craziness. You know, there's no logic there. There's no idea of we found him here before. He goes here often. The whole idea was she made the prayer, so therefore we found him. Like, what could I say at that point? You know what I mean?
What can you say? I was watching my friend's movie, Contradiction. And he has a gentleman, Ray Higgins, who talks about the egregore. And I spoke about it earlier in the show, how you attribute something happening, you give credit to the wrong thing because of your thought process. Did you see the movie, Contradiction?
I haven't seen that movie, but I've seen him speak before. A lot of videos on YouTube of him.
Oh, yeah, a lot. I met him about a couple of weeks ago, and I talked to him about coming on the show as well. And it was a great point about the egregore and how, you know, if you have a rabbit's foot and you rub this rabbit foot and your team wins and they keep winning, so you attribute to them winning because of you rubbing this rabbit foot. Nothing to do with them having a good team or practicing or playing hard. It's rubbing that rabbit foot that did it, and that's your egregore.
Right. Not the fact that LeBron James is on your team. It's the fact you have this rabbit's foot. That's why
exactly. Exactly. They got commercials like that where you do it for the team. This guy, whenever he goes down in the basement, the team wins. And so it's like, I'm going down in the basement. You know, I don't wanna, I want to – I'm doing this for the team. And he goes down there. Because in his mind, he started rationalizing all the times when they would win, what was he doing? So let me continue doing those things. They had birds that they tested where birds would, like, do a little dance or whatever, and they would get food. So they figure, okay, that made them get the food. There's all kinds of little things that they test about people's behavior and religion. It's a sickness.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just want to say I'm going to follow this show, and if you guys are on Twitter, I'll follow you on Twitter now. Good job
at TFF
of what you're doing.
Show.
I missed most of tonight, but yeah.
Yeah, at TFF
much
TFF
respect
Radio
for
show.
What y'all doing.
Thank you. Thank you. We had a show that was a really fun show we had about being in a closet. We call it the Underground Atheist Railroad. and how people were in the closet, and people still in the closet about religion. And these are people that have already kind of made their minds up, in their minds what they want to do as far as what they think about religion, but for its peer pressure and maybe pressure of losing their job or something, they don't say anything. And I ask the question, what was greater, maybe in the black community, being in the closet, being gay or an atheist? What do you think?
Definitely being gay, because that was, like, I know the proper thing to say nowadays is, well, the black community is very against homosexuality, but reality was that's where most homosexuals lived, was in black communities, whether it was, you know, working or living or whatever, or living with their partner and things like that. That was one of the few places to where they could not only be accepted, they could actually excel. There were community leaders who were, you know, choir members and, you know, city council members. So I would say that. But if you were to say you were an atheist in the black community 20 years ago, that would have been rough.
Wow. There's a clip I played, like, on doing that show. You ever seen a show called Bell?
No.
Oh, it's a powerful clip. I mean, it's a clip of a whole TV, a 30-minute TV show. And I think it was Robert T. Jones, I think that's his name, and Elise Neal. And he's actually, they meet together, they meet in a restaurant after his girlfriend dumps him because he wants to be serious. He wants to have a serious relationship. And so Elise Neal finds this fascinating. And so it's like, yeah, this is exactly what I want. So they start dating, and they have a great time. They love each other. And it comes to a point in time where she wants him to meet her family. And so they all meet together in the restaurant that her aunt owns. And the family basically rejects him because of that. Do you have about 6 or 7 minutes to listen? I'm going to play the clip again.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. All right. Hold a second.
This is my father, Bill Cooper.
I'm glad to finally meet you.
Thank you.
Jill's told me a great deal about you, and, well, it's nothing like meeting face to face.
No, sir.
Please, have a seat.
Thank you.
This is our traditional family dinner.
If you don't mind me saying, everything looks delicious.
It is.
Thank you, Lord, for this food. We ask you to bless our guest, Jack, and this special meal and our time together. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Let's eat. Amen. Let's eat.
Please pass me those bourbon mashed potatoes.
Oh. Well, that's quite an impressive career you've had.
Oh, yes.
War correspondent for the Associated Press?
Yes. It's a joy to be a reporter. I've been very fortunate.
Oh, your parents must be very proud.
Oh, yes.
I wouldn't know.
Oh, I'm glad. I think these are the best bourbon mashed potatoes you've ever made.
Well, what do you mean you wouldn't know?
We haven't talked in 10 years.
Are they in some kind of a coma? Or?
We had a falling out.
Well, what kind of falling out?
Over religion.
Yours or theirs?
Both, in fact.
Well, what are they?
They're Baptists.
Well, all right.
And you are?
I'm an atheist.
I'm going to need another helping those bourbon mashed potatoes.
I'm not quite sure I heard you correctly. Did you say you don't talk to your parents because you're a Methodist?
The boy said atheist, Gladys.
I know it was something peculiar.
And you never told my daughter what you were?
No, sir, I never told her.
No, I can't believe...
I'll handle this. So, that's why you and your folks don't speak.
Yes, sir.
Well, at least it shows you come from good parents.
Oh. So, you don't believe in God?
I deny the existence of God, yes.
Damn! Wow. Okay, wait. So what about Jesus? You don't believe in Jesus either?
At least as the son of God. That is.
I never thought I'd say anything like this as long as I live, but I can't eat my own cooking.
So you became an atheist when, After seeing some traumatic event covering the war?
Or maybe somebody dropped you on your head when you were a baby or something like that.
I said I'll handle this.
Actually, sir, it was a decision based on science, reason, and logic.
I see.
With all due respect, sir, we just have different philosophies, that's all.
I don't have a philosophy. I have a faith.
Praise his
name.
There
you go. We have preached his name.
Yep. Hey, listen, let me ask you a question. Okay, let's just say you're driving late at night in the back country roads of Georgia, and you look in your rearview mirror, and you see a state trooper. He's driving up on you all close and slow. Now, you got an open can of Budweiser in the car. Your taillight's busted. Your seatbelt ain't on, and you're rolling with a white girl.
Oh.
So now you're trying to tell me you don't start saying, please, God, God, please, God, don't let this man stop me. Please don't let this state trooper pull me over.
Yeah, that's what he says.
That's what I say.
These potatoes are so good.
Just so I can understand this. So if I were a drug dealer or a bank robber, and I go to church and I confess my sins, you would welcome me with open arms?
Hmm.
But because I'm an atheist, I can't be forgiven?
Because a drug dealer and a bank robber can be saved.
Oh, praise name, thank you, hallelujah.
And I can't? I thought your God forgives everybody.
Oh, he does. And when he gets around to you, you come back and see me.
So you did better if he was gay.
How could you not tell me?
I wanted to.
You lied.
I didn't lie. I just didn't tell you.
Well, what's the difference? Or can't you tell being an atheist and all?
Jill, you have every reason to be upset.
Oh, I'm past upset. I'm past furious. I'm bordering on enraged wrath, baby, headed toward physical retribution. We went to church together. You sang, you danced. I thought you had the Holy Ghost.
I love the music.
But not the words?
Jill, I'm sorry. I didn't tell you because I didn't want to lose you. Okay? Because I love you. And losing you will be the worst thing that ever happened to me.
Heart worked as good as your lips, you'd be one hell of a man.
Jill, I don't believe one thing, you believe another. What's the difference?
All the difference in the world.
So it doesn't mean anything that I love you.
How could you love anybody if you don't love God? How about you left for the night?
I did. I got halfway home and I realized there was something that needed to be said. You know, the most important thing in my life is seeing my children happy.
I know, Dad.
And no one knows more than me what it's like to lose someone you love. Which is why, forgetting everything I said earlier, I need to know. Are you so in love with that young man that life would be unbearable without him?
It's okay, Dad. It's settled. I told Jack that I never want to see him again.
And you're okay with that decision?
I am.
Oh, thank God.
Whoa.
Man.
That. I don't know. I had so many thoughts about that scene. And I actually seen the whole episode, so that's how I knew the backstory to how they had met and everything. But it was funny how the cousin said, "You know, you'd done better if you'd been gay."
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a real American thing, though, as far as atheism being the last, you know what I mean, last accepted little group that can get in anywhere. So
yeah, you're right, you're exactly right about that. It's like everything else can actually get in. Atheists until people see an atheist and say, "No, you're what's wrong with you? I mean, you're the same as anybody else. I mean, what do you picture as an atheist? You know, somebody with horns and a pitchfork, you know." And even on a little cartoon I had on that show episode, I had one shot on the slideshow, and it had two closets side by side. And one was a gay closet, and one was an atheist closet. And the gay closet, it was open, and it was empty, and they were gone. But the gay closet was still there. It was dark. You see eyes looking from inside, looking out of the closet. They were still there.
And at a certain point, it's so silly because every area and every group had a creation story. The Sumerians had the great pickaxe. The Egyptians had coming forth by day and night. Like, every group had their own creation story. So the idea that the surviving groups or the most powerful groups get to decide that theirs were real and everyone else's were, you know, mm-hmm. just imaginations, I mean, it's silly.
Right. It is. So who's the powerful? Who has the strength to push this religion onto everybody else? And with Christianity, back in the day, either you believe or you die.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
no
if
debate.
I could interject something here. So many of these stories were taken from older religions, too. They were adopted from, you know, stories that they had heard when they were growing up about other religions, and they took what they liked about those, you know, certain concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And people are still doing it today. It's just like Christianity is changing. You know, some of the churches that used to be strictly literalist, fundamentalists,
mm-hmm.
When I was growing up as a child, are much more liberal today than they were then.
Yep.
They try to evolve around you know, their target audience.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they try to make it, okay, let's appease, we want more people in the seats. So what can we do to get them in the seats? Let's change this up. Remember back in the day, Catholic, you couldn't eat meat on Friday. And you go like, well, goodness, you know, now they changed their mind. Okay, yeah, we changed our mind. God changed his mind. You can eat meat on Friday. So what about all the people that died before then that are in hell now doing time on a meat wrap? You know, they,
right.
You know, it's like, hey, meat, buddy.
And what was the thing that Hitchens banged on so hard, the idea of limbo, the fact that they said, okay, there's no more limbo after – you know, hundreds of years of teaching people that and scaring the hell out of people, you know, whose kids had died, you know, giving those people grief for the rest of their lives. But one problem I've had, though, as a non-believer in the theory of God is, since I've been raised around Christianity all my life, and my way to grieve has always been a Christian way,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what to say to people when somebody passes. I've had a few people pass in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to say now. That's something that's really stuck out to me.
I understand it. I don't know what to say when people sneeze now. I'm like,
Gesundheit.
I mean, yeah, I have to kind of like catch myself and try to say Gesundheit instead of saying God bless you. Like, no, there is no God. Okay. You know, like, you know.
You know, David Silverman, in a debate a couple of years ago, he was in a church, and somebody sneezed, and he says, "God bless you," and everybody laughed. It was kind of a joke.
And I wonder where that tradition came from anyway. I've never looked into that. Where did that tradition of God bless you come from anyway?
Well, they say when you sneeze, for that moment, like your heart stops, whatever, you know, you start breathing. That moment, evil spirits can creep into your body.
Wow.
Wow. And so, you know, God bless you. Kind of like counteract that, I guess. So, I mean, I love find stuff out that, you know, what cuts, why we do this, and, you know, what brought this on. And I may have a show about that one time in the future where, you know, all things look, handshake, where the handshake come from, where stuff come from. I mean, I'm always looking, that fascinates me about how we got to do certain things. And one in particular has nothing to do with religion, which maybe a lot of people don't even know, it was, I always found it confusing, was the abbreviation for pound. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, everything else, you know, abbreviation has at least the first letter of the word. Why is pound LB? So I researched and found out why. It's not the abbreviation for pound. It's the abbreviation for Libra.
What?
What is Libra on the zodiac chart? It's a scale.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. I know it's a bunch of useful knowledge, but it's funny to know that.
See, can you imagine being somebody coming from another area, coming into America or somewhere, and learning English and being told, you know what I mean, different things? Like, wait a minute, this doesn't fit this.
It's crazy. It's a stupid language. And like I tell my other co-hosts all the time, it's like, I mean, silent letters don't make no sense to me. I mean, why have it if you can't hear? Why is it in there? It's just sitting there, lame, not doing anything. I mean, you don't see that in mathematics. You don't see any silent numbers.
Right.
So, I post my Facebook page. You get a bill, say your bill, you owe us $400. Then when you see it written down, it's $5,400. I say, well, no, that was a solid five. That's what that was. You owe $5,400.
Solid five. That is crazy, man. I'm glad you told me that, though, man, because I like to learn little stuff like that, man. Can you give me the name of you guys' Twitter again? Because I'm on Twitter right now. I want to just add you.
It's at TFF Radio Show.
TSF.
TFF, the Forbidden Fruit. TFF, the Forbidden Fruit. Yeah. At TFF Radio Show, yeah. Yeah.
Radio Show. Okay, man. Well, I'm going to hang up and listen, man. Like I said
before,
man, good job on what y'all doing, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you.
All right.
All
right. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow.
That was a good caller.
Yeah, it was. I appreciate people calling in. I appreciate people calling in and email us all the time because we're always trying to have something interesting to say in a funny way. That's just me. I mean, I like to laugh and I like to make others laugh. And somehow, if you laugh, you can kind of like, you absorb information a little bit better sometimes.
You know, that clip that you've played a couple of times now from Belle, I've thought about that quite a bit. And in a way, it almost feels like a propaganda film. You know, where Christianity wins out in the
end, and
the daughter has the proper response, and her father is so relieved that he has the good daughter.
And he sent him on his way.
Yeah. And you could just as easily make that into a Muslim episode, you know, where the daughter has rejected the suitor because he's not of the Islamic faith or whatever, you know, insert your version of God, where the community does not want the young people to think for themselves or to come up with their own answers or to deviate or stray from the dogma. And that somehow threatens the community. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it, you're right about that. And we spoke about that, how the message that it left you with, because it could have easily turned it the other way and kind of legitimized atheism. But they didn't do that. They left it in a bad light. If they had left it in a good light, it wouldn't have hurt anybody. I mean, it would have showed them being open-minded and that, you know, love in a person and who they are can be more important as to who they believe in.
Right.
Because everybody's an atheist. You know, if you have another religion, then you're atheist towards their God.
Right.
They could have very well brought he could have been Catholic, or he could have been a Muslim. Then, yeah, now I'm atheist towards your God.
Right.
You know, it's we don't have the same, even if you have the same God, you might not have the same doctrine. So that still nullifies your entrance into whatever heaven that you claim to be. And even if in your own religion, no one ever follows it to the T. I'm thinking, you know, if you're serious about this, then how can you half-step it and plan to get the results that you are planning to get? I mean, you might as well not even be in a religion at all if you're not going to go by the T to that religion. Why limit yourself? Just have fun and be something else, because you're constricting yourself to this religion halfway.
Right.
And so you're going to actually get the results of someone who's not in the religion at all.
Yeah, and I think that's something about religions that where they claim to have truth, the T capital T H E truth, and that is really forcing people to put blinders on. You know, if you have found the truth, then you will not be as likely to look for answers. You think you already have all of the answers.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
It can be threatening when somebody else comes up with different answers than you do.
Right. And my thing is, because people who are religious and who are Christian, they don't even want to discuss this topic or talk about it. And my thing is, if your religion or your idea or whatever you hold sacred is so fragile that it can't stand up against questioning, if it's that fragile, then it's not worth being a part of. You know, what you have, it should be solid. So no matter what someone throws at it, it should stand the test of time. But people who are religious and who are Christians, they guard it and protect it like it's a fragile egg, and you know, don't look at it, don't say nothing about it. You know,
that's something that is really bothering me too. And one of the latest tactics that I think is being used to make sure that people do not question this is the idea. And I know Jonna was emphasizing this earlier, respecting all religions. Then what does respecting the religion mean?
Yes.
Because you can force other people to shut up and not question by screaming, you know, and playing the victim and saying, oh, you know, they're hating on me. No, we're not hating. We're asking questions, and we're wanting to know why you can't answer them.
Answer the question. They jump all over the question, you know, because I posted on my page a question, a couple questions, and I told you about the questions and how about slavery proving that there's no God. And one person even came on and said that if it wasn't for slavery, that black people would not be living as good as they are now. They would be living in shacks and I'm like, so you're so now what you're telling me, you're thankful for religion? Are you Uncle Ruckus from the Boondocks? Thank you, good white people. Yes, they gave us it was an internship. And they gave us, you know, I was like, what? Are you serious?
Right.
And like, you know, I said, look, you know, that's crazy for one thing. And number two, you got people in America, you got black people in America starving in America, just like they're starving in Africa. You got people living outdoors.
Right.
Where have you been? Are you under a rock that you don't see the same stuff existing here? And the reason that things are so bad in Africa is because people went over there and took rule. White people went over there and they took rule and they took the resources and ruled the country.
Right.
And robbed it of its wealth.
Right.
And so whether, you know, if you can take stuff out of each equation, and the end result would be different. So
you know, to me, it's absolutely heartbreaking when I see the drawings, the images of these slave ships, the way they transported slaves.
It's horrible.
I can't stand to look at it. It's like, oh, my God, I cannot believe that they actually did this to other human beings, where they would have to travel shackled in a prone, you know, laying down head to toe, side by side, with no room to move for months on end. And most of them died. I mean, this is awful.
They knew that. They knew they knew that. That was like designed. That was like in the plan that you knew some were going to die. So, well, we're going to take so many because we're going to lose so many in the process. And they were okay with that.
Well, it's just like any corporation today that, you know, they assume, okay, the cost of legal fees for defending, you know, poisoning the waters or whatever, you know, that's the cost of doing business. But I kind of lost my train of thought there.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I go off on these little branches, little tangents.
Once you talked about the accommodations in the trip over here.
Yes, and just the inhumanity of the whole thing. And then during the Civil War, you have these rich plantation owners that again, equivalent to the corporations today, who argued that if we abolish slavery, it would be the downfall of America. You know, that we simply commerce, we could not survive without the institution of slavery. And you have these poor Southerners that they'll never own a plantation. They will never own a slave. They have really the chances of them ever becoming wealthy like that are next to nil, and yet they're fighting in the Civil War tooth and nail to and dying for it, for the right to keep slaves, because these wealthy charlatans, you know, these manipulators tell them that they have to have it in order to – no, our economy is going to go down the tubes if we don't keep this. And people buy it. They believe it.
They do this to this day. I mean, when they have, like, the poor white people jumping on the bandwagon of the rich Republicans, and they have nothing in common, but they use the color as their motivation to get them to join their bandwagon, their Tea Party, whatever.
Right.
Why are you going to fight? You're poor. You're going to fight for a millionaire to keep his money.
Right. and they've bought into this whole American dream thing where anybody can make it. Well, yes, you can make it, but you know, there is some luck involved. There is some amount of you know, connections, who you know.
It is. There's a book called Outliers that I read, and it's about how the millionaires, the billionaires of today, how, you know, made their money and how they weren't that special from anybody else. It's just the circumstances surrounding them in the time that they were born. Because to be a computer or a millionaire like Microsoft, you had to be born in the mid-50s. Up 7 years or down 7 years, you wouldn't make it. It was that close, fine of a timeline. And all those factors that just took place of, you know, Gates being born into a fairly rich family and living in an area where his high school had a computer lab in 1967, which was unheard of, even for a college to have a computer lab, those type of things. So the connections and everything that there has to be in place for someone to be successful and for stuff to happen.
Right, and being in the right place at the right time, and they were lucky.
Yeah.
There are far too many people nowadays, I mean millions of people, that are out there working their butts off or trying to find work, and they're not making it. This is the wealthiest country in the world.
Exactly.
And there is no reason why someone who gets out there and works, you know, provided that we have jobs for them, there's no reason that they should not be able to have a decent standard of living. I'm not talking about mansions and limos, but, you know, just be able to put food on the table for their children and pay for a roof over the head and have education and health insurance.
Well, all this is, you know, what you're talking about, it's going according to plan, in my opinion. That's another show. I mean, if they really wanted people to have jobs and wanted people to be, you know, working and making good wages and have health care, it could be done. It's just the fact they don't want it that way. Why else would you allow importing to come in here and send jobs overseas? I mean, we haven't made any electronics in America in I don't know how long. We can't make a DVD player or stereo, nothing here. We can't make a phone. And we start all this technology, and it's all done overseas. Those jobs, all those iPhone jobs, all those Castile, all them jobs could be produced here.
Yeah.
And those are incomes. That's putting money into the economy. How can you, in the long run, send jobs overseas when you know this is going to be the outcome? But see, if you have less people, less jobs, then less jobs that are available, you can, you know, pay what you want to pay because you have no competition pretty much. Hey, well, hey, take it and leave it. You know, I know you got a PhD, but, yeah, this is a janitor job. It's paying $10 an hour. Either you make nothing an hour and starve, or you pay $10 an hour. We don't care about your PhD or your doctorate or your master's degree.
Right. And I've seen all too many jobs in the last few years where they're requiring it may be a position where they're paying $45,000 a year, and they're wanting someone with a master's degree or a PhD in a major metropolitan area. And I know $45,000 may seem like a lot of money to a good number of people,
you're right.
There are some. It's all a matter of perspective, you know, where you are. But really, you know, when it's ridiculous. They have really taken advantage of the global economy, and at the same time, I understand that. We have benefited tremendously from the lower wages in other countries. It has allowed us to buy goods at places like Walmart, where you can get, you know, a T-shirt for $10.
Yeah, poster for $7. But I think it's a double-edged sword. Yeah, we can buy this stuff cheaper now. But if we had jobs and making more money in those jobs, we could spend more money to scale down. So how many jobs do you think are overseas now that used to be done here? All those jobs. So you have people in the economy with those jobs spending money. That means the people who are selling stuff are making more money. So they got to hire more people. So it's like a domino effect on the good side. But they took it and sent the jobs outside the country. So it's a domino effect in the negative. You know, it doesn't make any sense. Of course, that's another job, another story, another show rather. We just done a show on education. We talk about that. Is education really worth the money that you pay for it, for what you get? I mean, does it take 4 years to be proficient at any position? Do you need 4 years of training to be a business manager? You know, do you need archery? Do you need archery and any electives? To run a business,
You know, something that I've experienced in the business world is oftentimes I don't know. It seems like in the last 20 years, a lot of people who had a 2-year technical degree
Let me say this. We're getting ready to stop streaming, so thank you for listening to the Forbidden Fruit Radio Show. About 5 seconds left. You can listen to the rest of it in the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Okay, go ahead. We're in a podcast now.
Okay. Well, the 2-year technical degree, a lot of people went a long way on that. I worked for a company where we had an engineering division, and they were hiring 19, 20-year-old kids right out of a two-year degree program, a technical program, and paying them around $40,000 a year. And these kids were homeowners by the time they were 22 years old. So they did very well. But they did not have a lot of the other things that a four-year education would provide them, and that is some of the skills in English and in humanities. They didn't have the humanities programs. I think core requirements in a four-year program are invaluable. You know, when you can learn about other cultures,
of course,
it just kind of expands your mind a little bit and makes you, I think, better prepared for society.
But I think you could get those necessary courses in a 2 year or two and a half or whatever. It doesn't need to be 4 years of fluff. You're paying for a lot of stuff that you're not going to use, and then you're being overcharged for stuff like books. I mean, the whole thing is a racket. I mean, a $300
right.
book, and then the next year you change the book, maybe just alter it just a little bit so you can be a totally different book so you can sell a whole new book for $300.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And I've been to college a couple of times. The second time I went for a business degree, and I did it in a virtual classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the nice things about that is all of the textbooks, some classes we might have 3, 4, 5 textbooks, and we would only read a few chapters out of each one. But the materials, the textbook fees were only $90. And all of that was delivered electronically. They were digital, and which I liked much better than having a hard copy textbook because I could go through in a PDF file.
Mm-hmm.
I could highlight. I could bookmark. I could search. And it was just amazing. And I thought, wow, I'm getting a much bigger bang for my buck for $90 than if I had.
That was still too much, but yeah, that was a better deal. That's still too much for electronic copy.
Yeah, but to get all let's say 3 textbooks for $90 when if I bought them in a hard copy format, could have cost me $600 to whatever.
Yeah.
So it comparatively, I thought I got a great deal.
Yeah, they just hit you with a smaller hammer.
Yeah. But the class itself was unfreaking believable as far as the expense goes. It was like $1,800, $1,900 for three credit hours. Are you nuts?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think that it should be a better ratio because of the return. They kind of base the return on what you're going to get out of that career once you start working, once you find a career, and hopefully it's in the field that you've been studying. I mean, knock on wood, if that's to happen. I mean, most people who are out there are not even working in the field they majored in.
Right.
And most businesses they're going to train you anyway. So you come in and you do 4 years and you're taking English and math and archery and bowling and golf and all this type of stuff. And then you come in and you're selling pharmaceuticals. And your major might have been in English or might have been in whatever.
Exactly.
And because I had a girlfriend and she, I think she's an English major. And she got a job working for Nestle's. And then I think initially she left and went to Frito-Lay. But to have... You know, that had nothing to do. She wasn't taking whatever Frito-Lay was the business model they had. She was taking English.
Yeah.
Now, I guess she could, communicate fairly well in their system, but she had to go through like maybe a several weeks of training because they trained her to know what she needed to know in relationship to their business.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what they do. And I talked about this company. They had it's called Bootcamp, Coding Bootcamp. I forget the name Dev Boot Camp, something like that, where you pay like $12,000, and you come out as a coder, and they teach you how to write code, or
yes.
even to learn how to write code.
Yes.
And you come out, and those jobs are paying anywhere from $75,000 up or down.
Right.
You know, depending on what...
Now,
what
if this, I think I've heard of this, and if it's the same program, you don't even pay anything for the program until you get placed in a job. Is that the same one we're thinking of?
I don't think this works that way. That's not my impression. That doesn't even sound...
Okay.
Business.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I think you have to pay the money up front with this one. There's no
okay.
financial aid. You pay the $12,000. Think of this, and I think it's like maybe 12 weeks or somewhere around in that time frame, and you're just constantly inundated. It's like a submersion process of that, and you come out, and, you know, you're. If the owner or the founder of the company, he just said that, you know, you don't come out knowing everything, but you come out where you can learn. You're a better learner.
Right.
It's just like when you go work for any company, they're going to teach you what they want you to do for them. And this
right.
gives you the fundamentals to be able to learn. And you come out, you spend $12,000 or whatever, and you can make $75,000 a year, you know, coming off the bat. As opposed
yeah.
to spending $80,000, and you might have to wait a year or two before you even find a job, and then when you get a job, if it's in your field, you may make $30,000, $40,000. If not,
right.
you might have to work at Walmart or McDonald's.
Yep.
And, you know, and companies nowadays are not going to take care of you like they used to. You used to retire from a job or a career or whatever, and you're going to go watch. Those days are long gone.
And a pension.
These household names that you grew up hearing, they lay people off.
Exactly.
Coca-Cola.
Yeah, no, it's
IBM.
There's no loyalty either way. I think it started with the employers were not loyal to their long-term employees.
No, by the bottom line.
And the employees eventually, a lot of them got a clue. They
yeah.
were like,
yeah.
okay, well, screw this. They're
exactly.
not going to be loyal to me. I'm not going to be loyal to them either.
Exactly. They want to screw you, and they want to, like, take care of their stockholders.
Yeah.
And their stockholders, look, we want to show an increase in our profits every quarter. And if we don't, that's a loss.
Right.
You know, they might not have a real loss. When you hear it on TV, oh, yeah, they lost, you know, so many millions of dollars.
Right.
They're not losing any money.
Yeah.
They're just losing money, projected money. And so they go tell you, and they use it as leverage to get you at lower wages, to get you to
right.
sell on a contract or whatever. You know, it's
well,
a game.
Walmart could still come end up with billions of dollars profit if they have about 2 million employees, and they could raise the average wage at least $4 or more. They would still have a few billion dollars in profit at the end of the year.
If you're making billions and billions of dollars every year, you're cheating somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're taking money out of someone's family's household, and you're keeping it in your pocket, and now you're even a bigger billionaire. Your company's worth even more billions.
That's why Costco, I don't know if you've seen some of that information recently on Facebook about Costco, where they pay their employees around $45,000 a year.
Wow.
And they're competing against Walmart.
Wow.
And it's, yeah.
That's amazing.
It's just incredible.
It goes to show you it can be done. They know
right.
they can do it, but it's about greed. You know, it's about – there's a quote. About I forget who the person, I have it on my Facebook page, and he says behind every great fortune there's a crime. Yeah.
There's probably some truth in that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is some truth. Yeah. I mean, you know, you think about it. I mean, I say this all the time to friends in casual conversation. If you're a billionaire, you stepped on somebody's neck to get there.
Yeah.
You don't become a billionaire by being nice and, you know, no, after you. No, after you. You don't get there doing that. You got your foot on someone's neck.
You got some henchmen working for you there.
Yeah. And I got to find that quote. It's on my page. I'm not sure where it is right now, but the guy wasn't. He wasn't very recent. I think he said it's like around maybe 1800, 1700, something like that. And I looked it up because someone else mentioned to that effect. So I tried to find it to see who said this, and it wasn't the person they said it. I guess they were just probably repeating it from hearing it from mm-hmm. that person's quotes.
Yeah.
And it's so true. It's so true that you know,
yeah,
more powerful.
Getting wealthy off the backs of the workers.
Exactly. If you got that much extra, you have stolen that money. That money should be in someone else's pocket because the people at Walmart that are at the top, they could not have any money if they didn't have those people where the rubber hits the road, working day
yeah.
in, day out, and sucking that money in. And you don't reward them because they helped you become billionaires so you can be even more discriminative and live in these exclusive neighborhoods and can't be seen and have power to affect policy in the country to your benefit.
Yeah. Well, and they know that they can depend on, well, they have in the past anyway, depended on the government to pick up the slack for them.
That's their safety net.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The government is helping them to pay those people a living wage through the distribution of food stamps or whatever they need to do to compensate mm-hmm. for the low wages that this employer is paying.
Exactly. That's
so,
a good point. That's a very good point. You hit that nail on the head. You know, they're not paying them what they can live on. So now the government is paying them, which the money comes from the people themselves who are
right.
working hard to struggle.
Right. So they get it through the taxpayers. They make up the difference for them. It's a racket.
That is a racket. I'm glad you brought that up because I hadn't really thought about that until you said that. They're not paying the people enough. If you can pay buy commercials on Super Bowl for like, you know, $2 or $3 million a minute, a 30-second commercial, and you run all these other commercials throughout the year, and you have your ad revenue budget in the millions,
mm-hmm.
and you know that means that you're taking money, you're taking food out of the mouths of your workers. Your
yeah.
money is piling up. It's piling up. You know, to the point where when you die, you're worth, $20 billion.
Right.
You know?
Well, any big company knows the power of propaganda and an advertising campaign. So, you know, something that really galls me is that corporations have made a big deal about giving money to charity.
Yeah.
And when you look at percentage of their revenue,
yeah.
The top companies in America, their
mm-hmm.
giving is a tenth of 1%.
Wow.
That is pathetic.
That is pathetic.
You know,
I didn't know the numbers, but that's terrible.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I mean, if I lived my life by those standards, hey,
oh,
my charity man. Needs, I'd be set for the next 200-300 years. But for what I have given to charity in comparison to what these corporations brag about how much they give to charity. Bull.
Right. And it makes such a big, grandiose thing of it. You know,
right.
got these checks with this checks the size of a person. You know, here's a big check, you know. It's a check for $10,000. And, you know, here, both of you get one in, you get one in, carry it on in there. And
right, and they spend $100,000 for the advertising campaign to show how generous they were with that $10,000.
Exactly. Where are our priorities here?
Yeah.
That's what's wrong with the country. We've had shows talking about stuff. We're going to have future shows talking about that, about how people don't think. They just roll with the punches, and just like in religion, you know, they say that, you know, the Lord is our shepherd, we shall not want. Now, if he's our shepherd, does that make us sheep?
Right.
You know, it all fits in. And, and we're sheep because we just follow along with the punches. We don't ask any questions. And that's what the powers that be want you to be. They want you to be gullible and pliable and just, you know, whatever we tell you, if we tell you it's raining, and believe it, you know, and we piss on your head, we tell you it's raining, and you believe it.
And I think that would be a good show because, you know, another side of that is the people who want to be sheep. They want to be told what to do. And there have been some studies, you know, that show that the difference between conservatives and liberals is liberals tend to be more independent thinkers, more individualistic, and think for themselves. And conservatives tend to be more go with the flow, and they look for a leader. They look for someone who can tell them what to. They respect authority, and you know it's just it's a different kind of a different wire in the brain altogether.
We want someone to teach us, show us, and let's follow them to wherever they're going to go, even if it's off a cliff. You know, we're going to follow. We're going to follow. And religion has that hold on people. And that's why, you know, I said, you know, it's a new crazy. But, you know, you really think about it, this craziness has been with us for centuries.
Yeah.
It's been around, and it's still new. It's just it comes in ever new forms. With the internet and electronics and telephones, people are being gullible from across the world.
Right.
Sending in their hard-earned money. And the thing with tithing, you convince the people to give you money. And it makes no sense, especially the bigger the church you are and your pastor's riding around in a Lamborghini or Rolls Royce and he has a jet here. Now, there's a show. I'm not sure if you heard about it, seen it. It's called Preachers of L.A. And it's about three or four preachers, and they're like big time preachers, like in LA. They got huge congregations, you know, in the thousands, the tens of thousands. And they ride up one guy, and his last name is Gibson, just like my name, got the same last name. And he has this saying that, you know, people see his Rolls Royce or his Bentley and say, you know, you see my glory, but you don't know my story. And I'm thinking, I could care less about your story. When you have people in your congregation that are starving and don't have two hoopties to rub together, and you're riding around in a Bentley, and that's one of your cars, and you got a spare house, that's his man cave. Most people have a man cave. That's a room in their basement. His man cave is a whole another mansion.
Oh, God. And, you know, the really sad thing is that most of the money that goes to support these operations come from the people who can least afford it. And I think the reason that is because when you have someone who's either poor or middle class, let's say lower middle class to poor, and they know what it's like to live from paycheck to paycheck. They have empathy. When they hear a story about, you know, we need money to do this, and they hear the organ music playing or whatever it is, you know, and they feel their heart touched because they can relate to that. And they think, oh, I can spare $5. I can spare $10 or $20 or $100. And they send it in. And these big wealthy operations are supported again by some of the poorest people.
Yeah,
And also, on top of that, another way to look at it, they're also looking for favor. And so they think, okay, if I send $5, then God's going to bless me.
Prosperity gospel.
Yeah, with my cup running over. You know, right. It'll be tenfold. So whatever I give is going to come back tenfold. And so that's what these preachers tell them to do. Hey, send me your money so you can be blessed. I mean, there's a church here in Atlanta where the congregation bought the pastor a Bentley. And they bragged about this. And I'm thinking, you guys have got to be crazy.
You're totally brainwashed.
Yeah, I mean, you give him a Bentley so you can be blessed. Why don't you give that money that you spent on Bentley and bless, you know, some people in your neighborhood who don't have. You could buy several cars or a bunch of food, or you could, you know, get some scholarships to college. Why does he need to ride around in a $300,000 car?
Right. That's just ridiculous. It's sick. Tell me, now I'm not really in touch with our religious community anymore. Are they still preaching the law of reciprocity?
Yeah.
Does that ring any bells?
I mean,
it's a law of reciprocity, and I don't remember who was preaching it back in the 80s.
Well, they don't use
that.
There's a term, but, you know.
But it's when they give, they will be given in return.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you give in faith that your money will come back tenfold.
Right, that's what I was just saying. That's what I was just saying. I mean, they give money with the intent, well, with the belief that God's going to bless them tenfold. You know, that's what one of church pastor would say. Well, he would say that tithing is a form of worship, and so you're supposed to get back more than what you put in. You know, you don't know when it's going to happen, but just keep doing it and be faithful, and it will happen. But I think that's just a law of averages. Something's going to happen anyway. So you're just waiting on something to happen so you can attribute it to your tithing.
Yeah.
And people will, you know, be poor and give their last dollar. You know, they give the money out of their rent, their light bill, their car note to tithe. And then they, end up losing their house or losing their car or whatever. And now the little trick is in saying, okay, well, God's testing your faith.
Yeah.
He's testing you now. Really?
I've got an answer for everything. And, you know, that was something that the Church Folk Revolution, that other podcast, something that he was preaching about, too, is stop tithing. And I thought, man, I sat there as Auntie Atheist, and I asked him, I said, hey, you know, I'm an atheist. Do you mind if I hang out here with you for a while? And he goes, no, that's fine. And I thought, wow, you know, I wonder if this guy is atheist or borderline atheist, because he sure had a lot of angry church folk calling in, and they were going, yeah, stop that tithing. You know, that's no good. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're seeing through the wizard's curtains, that's for sure. So
yes, that's what it is. That's a good analogy. It's the Wizard of Oz, and you look through the curtain, and they don't pay no attention to the man behind the curtains.
Yeah.
It's all an illusion. And I, you know, like I said, I'm not here to, I guess, my main goal is not to change someone or whatever, but just, you know, just like I was once in that spot, and someone, you know, raised my veil and showed me what the truth was. And I think that I owe that, because like my friend Travis from Funny to the Moon, he'll always say, you know, people have been tricked. And he says he feels an obligation to untrick as many people as he can.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to untrick some folks. And I understand, you know, when you're there, you don't see anything else because it's strong. It's a great plan. It put it to you when you were young, and it put it to into your mind generations ago before you was born. It was already a plan to put into your mind before you was born, and it handles itself. It's automatic. It's a self replicating system that just continues on with no type of monitoring. You know, it just handles itself. You know, your parents were told you, and their parents told them, and their parents' parents told them. And it came from a source that you believe, and so that's why it sinks in. And now this is if you go against it, it's almost like you're going against your whole ancestry.
Right. You know, have you ever read The God Virus?
I was getting ready to get to that. I heard the guy on the Thinking Atheist.
Yeah.
And he talked about that. I was like, I think that's the next one I'm going to read, because I just did the God Delusion. And there's another book called, I love the title. It's called God Hates You, Hate Him Back.
Oh, I read that. That was a delightful book. It really was.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely read that one. It's pretty brutal. but he lays it out. But as soon as you get a chance, I would definitely recommend The God Virus by Daryl Ray.
It's a virus.
And he talks at length about how churches, how the religious group seeks to propagate the virus and to infect other people and make sure that they remain infected.
Exactly. That's a great point. That's a great point. That hits nail on the head, because people, they're in it and they can't see themselves out of it. And they defend it, I mean, to the teeth. I mean, don't say nothing about their Jesus. And they will come at you, I mean, like crazy, and try to get out. It's worse than a gang. I mean, gangs, you can't leave a gang. It's hard to leave a religion, because the people that you knew in the religion don't want you to go. I don't know. It's partly, you know, who are you to leave and I'm still here, or, you know, what's wrong with you? We'll pray for you, that type of deal. And
yeah.
I remember there was a radio show called Michael Bazin radio show. It was a syndicated show. And he made a comment that he didn't owe any of his success to God, and how he basically did it on his own with the help of friends and people and circumstances. And at that point, I was like ready to like not listen to his show ever again. I think I stopped listening to his show like maybe a week, and it came back. And it was a great show. And then eventually I just came on board, you know, I'm like, he makes a lot of sense.
The light bulb went on.
Yeah. I mean, like it was a series. It was a process, because people want to attribute it to just one particular incident. Okay. Your mom died. She got sick and she died. So that's why you don't believe anymore. I said, no, that was pretty much like the last straw that broke the camel's back. There was a bunch of stuff before then. I mean, just little things, and some not to be done with religion, because like I said, I was always naturally inquisitive. I used to read the Bible, not the Bible, but the dictionary, just look at words.
Yeah.
And I remember, and we had a show about this, about Christmas, and this, you know, it's like the brick in the wall, or it's like a sweater where you pull the little one piece of yarn and the whole sweater unravels. So I'm listening. I remember it started with Christmas. And when I was a little kid, the story didn't make any sense to me. And I always said that Jesus, Jesus is Santa Claus for adults.
Yeah.
And so they get you with this story early on to get you in that gullible mold so you can start believing crap. And so I remember they tell us, Santa Claus, he delivers toys to every kid in the world. In my mind, I'm like, I'm probably about maybe 8 or 9. I'm thinking, okay. He has one bag on his shoulder and that sleigh, and he delivers to every person every kid in the world. He needs something bigger than that. I was like, so my mind starts expanding. It's like, maybe he has an 18-wheeler. Maybe he has an 18-wheeler, and he pulls out a front. And at the time, I lived in the inner city. I lived in an apartment. We didn't have a chimney. So I'm like, okay, what is he going to do? Is he going to come through the door? Does he have a key? Yeah. You know, what's up with this? Story just started unraveling and breaking down. I'm like, okay. And even today, I'm like, you know, as you get older, it makes even less sense. You know, okay, he was making
right.
these toys. He was making name brand toys. I'm like, he's fabricating and making these toys. He should be in court, lined up in court for days with all these lawsuits, making all these name brand toys. He's the original bootlegger. And so that
I used to go through that questioning too. I remember as a kid, and our home didn't have a fireplace either. And I don't remember if I thought of this myself or if someone else told me that he put butter on his belly and he slid under the door. And I remember looking at the crack in the door, and I thought, you know, oh, God. You know, I'd put my hand and try to get my hand through the door, and I couldn't get my hand under the door. And I thought, wow, you know, here's this fat guy. That's some serious magic right there.
It just gets your mind ready for what's to come, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of lubricates the doors of your mind to get you start to believe other stuff. And
yep.
It's almost the same scenario. He watches you. He knows what you're doing. He knows if you're naughty or nice. That's what Jesus does. And so, and then I got this book. I found this little book. It's actually a pamphlet. And it asks the question, is Christmas really Christian? And it talked about all the stuff in Christmas and the Yule log and the Christmas tree and all this type of stuff. This has nothing to do with Christ. And they start arguing the point of four is, you know, when was he born? And in the Bible talked about what was happening when he was born, and the sheep were out doing in the field, and like they shouldn't have been out in December.
Right.
That doesn't match up.
Yeah, no, that whole Christmas mythology of December birth, you know, was taken from other cultures.
Yeah, exactly.
But
from astrology.
Yeah, and Easter is the same way.
Yeah. Easter.
the pagan cultures,
it is,
yeah.
It is.
Astarte, the goddess of fertility, and the eggs and the rabbits and all that stuff. So it's pretty wild.
The equinoxes, the summer solstice, the winter solstice, you know, all that in the three-day death, three-day, you know, resurrection and on the cross. I saw all this in the movie Zygite and about, you know, and how it's a three-day death of the sun, basically, is what they thought. Because around December the 23rd is when the days neither get longer or shorter. Because, you know, throughout the year, the days get either longer or they get shorter.
Right.
And right now they're getting longer. Because after the 25th, they start getting longer. But on the 23rd, the 23rd, the 24th, 25th, it kind of stands still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they like get longer or shorter. And so that's your three-day death. And then on the 25th, it rises just a little degree higher, the sun. And so now signifying longer days.
Yeah.
And all of that just made sense. It just click, 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 click. You know, because you listen to religion, nothing clicks. You know,
right,
like,
it's primitive man trying to explain his environment, and today I don't understand why people can't see that. I think they just don't want to see it.
They don't want to. It's like the little kid when you're trying to talk this to people. It's like, remember the little kid and they put their hands over the ears, la 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 la. I can't hear you.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. They don't want to know the truth. It's like that movie with what's his name, Nicholson. He said, you can't handle the truth.
Yeah. Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, you can't handle the truth, and they can. You know, it spits on their parents, their ancestors' graves. You know, people don't want to be, you know, like we was a fool to believe it. They don't want to be looked at as a fool, so they hold on to it.
Right. They have to think they have the answers.
They have the answer. And you, no matter how much logic, you know, like the character House, he says, you know, if you could reason with the religious person, there wouldn't be any religious people.
Yeah.
All the reason in the world doesn't make sense to them. So, okay, look at this. Now, look at this. Can you see the inconsistencies? Can you see? And they can't. And I think only if you ever get anybody to see it in the midst of that debate. I think that seed, has to be planted, and they will come to that epiphany on their own.
Yeah. And you know what you said just a few minutes ago? It was, you mentioned something about people asking you, did you have something terrible happen, or did, I don't know what it was you said, did somebody die or whatever. But I think sometimes that can be a catalyst when, yes, those seeds may already be there,
mm-hmm.
but then
a
death of a loved one or some tragedy in someone's life can be the catalyst that will cause that seed to actually sprout.
Exactly. Yeah, it can be a catalyst. Yeah, and it was. I mean, it was. It's just that when my mom was sick, and I'd already, before that, was already in that direction. But when that happened with my mom, I was like, well, I'm going to just, get another try. I'm going to go ahead and see, I'm going to go with this. And no results. Because I like I told the gentleman that called in earlier, I got this Zygite movie from Dick Gregory about maybe 2 or 3 years before my mom passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going through that. And even in church, I mean, I never felt that I was ever the best church person as far as, quote unquote, being a church member and being involved in the church and that type of deal. I felt I was better as far as a person for most people that was there. I saw so much stuff going on in the church. And even people that were supposed to be deacons and ministers, I saw that a lot of times I took the higher road or wanted to help someone more so than they would.
Right.
And I'm like, I remember one incident, one friend of mine, she was the deacon in training, and we all came out at the same time at the church after hearing a sermon about Jesus helping the man on Sunday. And someone was in the parking lot asking for money for their gas, because they wanted to have money to get gas to go back home somewhere in another state. And it got to the point where, I don't mind helping people, but let's at least show me some evidence that you need what you're asking for. They asked for gas money. I was like, where's your car? Produce a car. And, where's your car? And so I said, if you show me a car, I'll give you some gas money. And then I think he said something about to the effect that I can understand if you don't want to help me because I'm white. And that made her mad, so she didn't want to give him any money at all. Mm. And I'm like, come on. I mean, just he didn't, curse you out. I mean, you just gave him just like that. So I just stuck around, and, he told me he had a car. And one of the members said, here's a couple dollars. If he doesn't have a car, bring my money back. I was, okay, fine. So she gave me a couple dollars, and I think I, put $10 with it or whatever. And I gave him, $12 with gas. And I'm thinking, I'm not even a deacon in training. I'm not, this person who has all the faith. And, you should want to help this person regardless, whatever they said, if they need help. And he didn't really say anything all that bad. It wasn't bad at all, really. He didn't really, insult you. I mean, help the guy. You just came out of the church with a sermon about helping someone on Sunday, because the story is that people got upset at Jesus because he helped someone on Sunday, because Sunday's supposed to be like an off day.
Yeah.
And I think he went to the church after somebody, they told him basically the same story. It's Sunday, we can't do nothing. And you're preaching about that across the street. I was like, come on.
I think some of us, I don't know if you were one of those or not, but when Jonna was on earlier, she was talking about some of the teachings that the Bible has that are actually valuable, that resonate with people. When you just dismiss all of the killings and the all of that stuff. But when you there was something that Jesus said about, you know, when I was hungry, you gave me something to eat, and when I was, you know, and the idea was that, you know, when you have done this to the least of these my children, you have done it unto me. And the idea was that Jesus, this archetype of the innocent, could be anyone that you meet on the street.
Exactly.
And that message sunk in for me. And that, you know, that you can still be an atheist. You can still leave the church, and you can take, because those teachings are not unique to Christianity.
They're not even original.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but they are philosophically beneficial to humanity, and I consider myself a humanist, and I think you know, you anyone can say I'm a humanist and do it without apology.
Exactly. If you do something, if someone helps me or does something for me, and they're not doing it under coerce, that, you know, if they don't, they're going to hell and burn forever, and they're doing it on their own, that's more valuable to me. I feel better as opposed to someone walking up to me and says, look, I'm going to give you a meal, but the only reason they do it is because someone has a gun to their head next to them and forced them to give
it. Looking at it as a PR opportunity. You know, to go tell everyone how good they are. You know, they'll broadcast, you know, what they've done and their good deeds this week.
Exactly. Or they're being promised something good. Okay, you give this person a meal, and we'll give you tenfold that amount of what you gave that person. Okay? Yeah, you know, God says he's going to give me tenfold what I give out, and my cup will run over. And so that's why I'm helping you, because I'm looking for this return, almost like a lottery ticket. Okay, I'm going to buy this lottery ticket, you know, for $5 or whatever, and I'm going to get tenfold back or whatever. So that's what they look at as far as helping someone. Or just an obligation to say, I gave 10%. And if you gave that 10%, if you help someone outside the church, they don't want to hear anything about that when it's time to give them 10%. Like, well, does that count? I helped 10% of the community or whatever, so that should count towards my 10% I got to give to the church. No, we're not trying to hear that. That's something you do on your own time.
I'm going to have to take off here in a minute, but there's one other story. You know, when you're talking about these people in the church and how they're not really living up to this morality that they claim. And of course there's hypocrisy everywhere. Everyone is a hypocrite
of course.
Time or another.
Of course.
But this one lady I used to work with years ago, she loved to be highly visible in the church. She was a part of the church prayer team. Her name was always, you know, in publications and this and that. She was highly visible. And she came into work one day, and she was griping because she didn't get to spend as much time with her boyfriend over the weekend because he was a fireman. And he got called out. He was on call, I guess. There was some guy who was threatening to commit suicide. And they had to send a SWAT team out to his house and the fire department. And my reaction was, oh, my God, if he didn't want to commit suicide before that, he sure as hell did when the SWAT team showed up.
SWAT team?
Yeah. Well, you know, he could have had a gun. He could have been threatening to kill somebody else.
Okay,
you know, what else?
Okay.
They get a little excited when somebody talks about suicide. And she says, I rarely get to spend time with my boyfriend, and I was so mad. It's like, oh, my God, why doesn't he just kill himself and get it over with?
That's terrible. That's selfish.
She was so angry that he took time out of her personal life.
I know. I shamefully say I've done something like that where you're driving on the expressway and it's big pile up, and like, it better be something bad. You know, it's like, It better be something bad for to make me late where I'm trying to get to. You know, all the stop and go traffic, and you get there, and it's hardly nothing. Like, for this?
Yeah. Some cops got an immigrant stopped on the side of the road, and you're like, really?
You know? Really? You know, this better be like a 2-car pileup, 3-car pileup. I want to see some blood. This better be, you know, worth me waiting for.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just us being impatient. You know?
Right.
But, yeah, I get your point. And I know you got to go. And we could be cut off at any moment, so I think we should just leave under our own account as opposed to being dragged off.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call. It was good talking to you. Enjoyed the show.
I enjoyed it.
As usual.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to end it right then. All right.
Take
bye,
it easy.
Atheist. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Again, this is a Forbidden Fruit Radio Show podcast, and we are just about out of here. So listen in next week, and we will be back actually this week. And we have another fine show for you. So thanks for listening to Forbidden Fruit Radio Show podcast.